Hello, I'm Brandon House. Do you appreciate the free programs at worldviewradio.com, WVWTV.com? Do you appreciate the fact we put out a 24-hour-a-day stream of free television? By the way, did you know that's free for you to watch, but it's not free to us? We spend thousands of dollars a month in pushing out free programming. We have to pay the bandwidth. Every time someone listens to a radio show, watches a TV show, we get a bill. We have to pay the bandwidth bill. That comes to thousands of dollars a month, not counting the cost of our IT guys and all the other costs that go with producing television, the guys in the control room, and so much more. If you appreciate WVW Broadcast Network, would you partner with us? You can partner with us and help us push out free programming as a ministry of WVW Foundation, because you know what we could do? Put it all behind a paywall. But instead, we said, let's not do that. Let's push out programming for free as a ministry of the WVW Foundation. Would you please consider making a contribution right now at WVWFoundation.com? That's WVWFoundation.com. You'll also find our mailing address there if you prefer to support us through the mail. You can also use our phone number and make a contribution over the phone by calling 901-468-9357, 901-468-9357. Thank you for supporting free programming through WVWFoundation.com.
This is Brandon House Live. Whether the issue is law, science, economics, history, family, social issues, education, religion, government, or national security, Brandon brings the issues of the day into clear focus through the lens of a Judeo-Christian worldview. And now, here is your host, Brandon House.
All right, good evening. Welcome. Glad you are with us. We're going to have Dr. John Witcher join us. Many of you have met Dr. John Witcher. He's been in our studio several times. He's the doctor from Mississippi that said, hey, I don't want to put my patients on Remdesivir, but ivermectin. And they terminated him. Dr. John Witcher. He hangs out with a lot of great guys like Dr. Jim Thorpe, who's a regular here, Dr. Peter McCullough, who was here last night. Dr. John Witcher joins us with a big announcement. I think, in fact, this is the first national outlet he's been on with this big announcement. Then we'll be joined by Ivan Raiklin, a guy we'll try to convince to come out of his shell and tell us what he really thinks about what's happening in Washington, D.C. In fact, he'll give us an update of some of the things going on there in Washington, D.C., and the 14,000 hours of raw footage that apparently Kevin McCarthy has been backed into a corner to release if he wanted to be Speaker of the House. Then we joined by a new guest, Stephen Mosier. Stephen Mosier will join us. He is with an organization that, fighting the depopulation plan. He's also an expert on China. It would be my first time to interview him. Perhaps you've read about him or seen him on any of a numerous outlets, and we're honored to have him with us here tonight. Thanks to Rebecca Terrell, who introduced us to him. Then Bill Federer. Let's talk about borders. A North American union. The push to merge America, Canada, and Mexico together. We'll talk about reparations. The push is on for reparations. And we'll also talk about immigration migrants that, are they here to just create division among Americans? In other words, are they here to get on the public dole, to vote Democrat, and then to live off the hard work of Americans, and thus to create animosity between illegal immigrants, and Americans? We're all immigrants at some point within our history of heritage as a family. The issue is the illegal part, right? But is the goal to get Americans to be disgusted with the high cost of food due to inflation, fuel, everything else is going up, while we have all of these illegals pouring into the nation, getting free hotel rooms, free food, and then sitting on taxpayer entitlement programs while Americans are struggling, who are working, to pay their tax bill and their food bill, is their housing bill? Is that all a design to pit the groups against each other and then label the hardworking Americans as racist, to crater America through chaos and conflict? We'll talk about that tonight with historian Bill Federer, big lineup, lots to do tonight. Let's get right to it. Dr. John Witcher, welcome to the broadcast. Thanks for being with us.
Yes, thank you. Thank you, Brandon.
And you've got Brooke. You got Brooke with you.
I do have Brooke with me tonight.
Brooke, for those who don't know, is his lovely wife. How you doing, Brooke?
Doing well. Excited to be on tonight.
Well, glad to have you guys here. All right, is this your first national outlet to make this announcement?
It is my very first national outlet.
Well, thank you. We're honored. Well, Dr. John, you've been in this studio several times. You were with us at our Ozarks conference. You joined us on the platform there. Our audience met you first because as an ER doc, you were trying to save the lives of your patients, save their life. And you were saying, well, this remdesivir, I'm a little concerned about that. Let's try this ivermectin. And because you were trying to fulfill your Hippocratic oath, do no harm, you end up losing your job, did you not?
That's correct, Brandon. I mean, you know, this has been an ongoing battle. Of course, there's been so many people that have been, their lives have been turned upside down since the COVID pandemic has arrived. So, we've been in the fight since day one. And Brooke and I, when the COVID lockdowns came about and the mask mandates and all of that, Brooke was very upset. And so we've just been in the fight for months now.
You started an organization known as what? What was the name of the organization?
Name of the organization is Mississippi Against Mandates. And we started that in August of 2021. And that was primarily to fight back against the vaccine mandates that were being imposed statewide. Started within the hospitals, my hospital, we basically was told if you don't get vaccinated, you're going to be terminated. And that offended a lot of us that had not been vaccinated, doctors, nurses, healthcare workers. I mean, here we were, we had been in the fight since day one treating these COVID patients. Showed up at work, never, you know, we'd been in the fight. Now, some of us had COVID already and some didn't. And so I had never gotten COVID, still haven't gotten COVID, and I've treated thousands of patients. But
you have a very strong immune system. I think I just got it for the third time.
Yeah. So, I mean, some people do and some people don't. But, you know, we were concerned back there, and you know, we didn't think it was fair to mandate these vaccines, so we formed a group and we pushed back, and we literally helped thousands of people throughout Mississippi get exempt. Most of them got release exemptions, so that's how we got started in all this. And since then, it's just been we've just been in the fight.
Okay, so you're proven that you can take an oath, and you took an oath as a doctor. You raised your hand and took an oath, did you not?
Well, you know, I went into medicine, you know, before I took that oath when I graduated. But I mean, I started medicine to help people.
Right.
And I was taking an oath then that, you know, I was going to do that's what I became a doctor to do. It was a calling for me. It was not that was always what it was.
But the point I'm trying to make is you literally had to raise your hand and take an oath, right?
Well, all medical students at the end of their 4 years, we take an oath.
And you were true to that oath, even to the point of losing your job. So in other words, you have proven that you will take an oath, make a promise, make a commitment, and do what is right. Even if it costs you personally, you're going to keep your word. You're going to keep your bond. You've proven that. So I don't know what people are looking for in this day and age, if not for people that have a track record of doing what they say and promising they're going to do. Now, you've done that. I've watched it. I know you well. If our audience doesn't know, we have become personal friends, just full disclosure. So, Dr. John, with that being said, you're now looking at another oath. Do you want to make the announcement of where this is leading you?
Well, after much prayer, a lot of prayer, Brooke and I, and that's how we started Mississippi Against Mandates, with a lot of prayer. We've made another decision. And once again, this is not a light decision. This is something we've discussed with our close friends, our family, our friends, our pastor. And, you know, we just feel like we're being led to do this. This is a calling from God. And so we're going to have to go forward. And so we're going to, I'm announcing that I'm running for governor of Mississippi on the Republican ticket. And the primary will be August of this year of 23.
August of this year is the primary. You're announcing tonight you're running for governor of Mississippi. I'm only a few miles from the line. I was born in Jackson. Mm-hmm. And I know there are a lot of folks tonight that if they're watching live in Mississippi are quite happy. Those that will hear it will be quite happy. So can you tell us who you would surround yourself with? If and when you win, who are some of the people you'd surround yourself with that maybe our audience would recognize?
Well, you know, I've been going through literally thousands of contacts that I have on my phone, and I've made these contacts. I've had them some for years, and many of these people I have become very close to in the last 3 years. I've been praying all along the way these last 3 years, and meeting people and praying with people and crying with people and hugging people. And so by now, that's who I've got surrounded with me. You know, there's quite a few of those. And these are people, some of them are leaders in the communities. Some of them are doctors right here in Mississippi. Some of them are doctors outside of Mississippi. We have pastors, business leaders, many that you would recognize. We have some vaccine injured on there, some from right here in Mississippi. Mm-hmm. And we even have some people on there that their loved ones died in the hospital because of the hospital protocols that were used that did not help them. They passed away when they really didn't have to. To be honest with you, I mean, if they would have used things that doctors all over the country and right here in Mississippi were using, their lives would have been saved. And so that's really why I'm getting involved with this. It comes down to these suffering people that are suffering at the hands of Big Pharma. Moderna and Pfizer in particular, these mRNA vaccines, they're not safe. I have patients that are suffering. I've met patients from all over the United States that are suffering. And I've also met patients, I've helped with patients, keep them out of the hospital so they don't get involved with these death protocols. And I've been there when many of these patients have not made it. You know, I've not been able to get to their bedside, even though I've tried, but that was not possible. And so we're doing this for the suffering people out there. We want justice for those people. And that's what we're going in to leadership for. We're going in, we have Dr. McCullough, Peter McCullough, I was with him this weekend in Orlando at the Health and Freedom Conference. And we were there together, and he will be my Dr. Latipo in Mississippi.
He was our guest last night. He was our guest last night. So you're saying that you have talked with him. He has agreed to be your health expert, like Dr. Lapato. How do you say his last name?
Latipo.
Latipo is who, by the way, is the black gentleman, the black doctor that is working so great down there in Florida with Governor DeSantis, who was part of the America's Frontline Doctors special we filmed a year ago this last June. So we've actually worked with him on a small scale, met him and know who he is. And of course, never knew that that's what he would go on to become. And he's just done such a great job. So you're saying, just like Governor DeSantis has had him as his strong advocate in the health field, Dr. Peter McCullough has agreed when you become governor to hold that role in Mississippi.
Absolutely. Day one, he will be appointed as our new state health officer here in Mississippi.
I might have to move a few miles over the border, Dr. John.
Yeah, come on to Mississippi. We're going to have lots of people coming here if I'm governor.
Well, there's people on our website tonight are on Frank underneath the player saying that if Texas keeps going blue, they're going to and you become governor, they're going to move to Mississippi.
Oh, we're going to follow. That's what we want. You know, Florida's now taken over as the free state of Florida. I think Texas had held that for a while, but we're looking to be the next free state, the free state of Mississippi.
Excellent. All right. So what other big issues will you be running on?
Well, there's lots of issues with Mississippi. you know, there's, of course, we know about the health care, and we want medical freedom. Right now, we're working on a bill, both on the Senate and House side, to allow doctors to speak freely to their patients, to give them informed consent. Because, you know, what we've seen throughout this COVID debacle is that these doctors have been silenced. They've been muzzled, and they've been threatened with their license. If they say anything negative about the vaccines, or if they say anything that goes against, you know, if they want to treat patients, say, with ivermectin or hydroxychloroquine, they're on a list. They are labeled as misinformation givers.
Can they acknowledge vaccine injury?
And they can't even acknowledge that, many of them. They're very afraid, okay? And so we're gonna take the muzzle off the doctors throughout Mississippi and let them speak, because we want full transparency. We want to know who's being disabled and who's dying from these vaccines and these bad hospital protocols all over Mississippi. Mm-hmm. Okay, that's number one. We have a lot of work in Mississippi.
You're gonna stand up obviously for parental authority, freedom of speech, no COVID passports. Yeah. Fighting the intrusion of the federal government, FBI, coming in and knocking down the doors of our citizens and using SWAT teams in a manner that they don't normally and have not traditionally done, whereas they normally just say to the attorney, tell your client to turn themselves in. You're going to stand up to the federal bureaucrat overstep, right?
So absolutely. I believe I'm a very conservative person. I'm Republican, but I'm afraid, you know, I'm a conservative. Okay. And I stand for conservative values. I stand for small government. You know, I believe that we as individuals, we have to use our strengths, and we can't rely on a handout. It only weakens us. Okay. And so I believe that now some people need help from time to time, and sometimes long term. And we have to help those people. That's what we're called to do as God's people, to help the less fortunate. But the people that can get off of aid, they need to. And we need to help those people develop skills through education and through skills, work skills. Not everybody needs to go to college, but everybody needs skills to work. We need to help those people do that. And we need to combat drugs. Okay. I'm going to be very strong on drugs. That needs to be eliminated. There's a big, big problem all over the nation, but right here in Mississippi, we have a tremendous amount of drug abuse and drug use, and it's keeping our people down, okay? It's when you're under mind-altering substances, you're not going to flourish, and so we're going to be real tough on drugs and crime of all sorts. And education is another big thing. I think that all people should have should be educated. If people want to be educated, we should find ways to educate those people and not strap burdens of finances on them. And so these are some areas. Of course, we could talk about roads. They're infamous in Mississippi. Our roads are just come to Mississippi and drive around and you'll see what I'm saying, but they need some help. And so we're going to make sure that some of this money that we get, that we've been getting. Well, first of all, we're going to try to eliminate it. You know, we've got to get off of the federal government's payroll. We just have to. We've got to learn how to be self-sufficient in Mississippi. We've got to bring businesses here and help the people have good jobs. But, you know, businesses aren't going to come to Mississippi if the environment's not right. We've got to create that environment for them.
Exactly.
So that's what we're going to do.
People are commenting on what a good-looking couple you are, and I also just noticed, that's what they're saying online here. I also just noticed That was a little bit of a Nancy Reagan, Ronald Reagan moment there. She gave you the word. Yeah. She gave you the word you needed.
She gave me the word. She did.
We used to watch Nancy Reagan do that with Ronald Reagan, and it was. I think the American people liked it because I know the American people liked it because it showed the chemistry between the first lady and the president. It also showed she was very interested in what he was saying. She knew what he was saying, and so anyway, I thought I just saw a Ronald Reagan Nancy Reagan moment there.
Oh, maybe so. Well, listen, we got to introduce you to Brooke and let her talk and let her say a few words. She's got some plans. We've been talking over things and things that she wants to do and interested in as the First Lady of Mississippi. So let's go, Brooke,
tell us what you're thinking. By the way, you're quite successful in the business field as well. So I know you could bring some business common sense and free market principles as the First Lady.
Well, you know, I am a big believer in the American dream. And I know that Dr. John Witcher is too. And home ownership is real important. And I feel like, you know, it's the first step on building wealth and creating some independence. And that's what I do. I work in the real estate field.
And by the way, if I may brag on you, you're like a really top realtor. I mean, you're crushing it.
I have been very blessed. I've worked hard and been very blessed. I think last year sold about 50 houses, and the year before that,
wow,
the years that it was really busy, I think I did about 65 houses a year.
Wow.
And I'm a solo, you know, by myself. I don't have a team, so I'm taking people, that's a lot of work. It is a lot of work. It is. Johnny will tell you, but I love it. I love the happily ever after of knowing that people are on the right track. And these days, I'm like, okay, we have a water source. We can put the chickens over here. You got a place for a garden. You can put your freeze-dried food in the storage space. You know, I'm trying to get everybody for the future because we need to be prepared for the future.
Absolutely.
So you know, as far as supporting Johnny, you know, in this endeavor, you know, we pray, and I feel like it's really important to lead with, you know, to follow what the Holy Spirit's telling you. And I can tell you that ambition to be in a position of a political leadership like a governor has not been on our radar at all. And this has completely come about in obedience to the Holy Spirit and prayer and, you know, just those promptings, because it's for such a time as this that we have to stand up, because when good people, we're not perfect, we're far from perfect, but when people that have the right heart without any influences, outside influences swaying them, when they will stand up and do the right thing for the next generation, we have influence. We have influence because we want our children to grow up in a free country, and we want no medical tyranny. We want them to have opportunity to have homes and families and futures and security. That's our motivation, and that's what's behind our decision.
Excellent. Well, you don't have a campaign website, I'm assuming, yet, do you, John?
No, we're working on that. We're going to get that up and going, and we're working on that very quickly.
We're working on it, and this morning, as I was, you know, I think I get up early, and I was on my knees in prayer. And I was just saying, oh goodness, what's ahead? What do you have for us, Father? And he laid on my heart, he said, one Mississippi under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Hmm. And this is not about red and blue. It's not about Democrat or Republican. It's not about black or white. This is about unity and being able to provide the opportunity for all to flourish in security and freedom, and health, and knowing that, you know, when they go to the doctor, that doctor's working for them and not for a pharmaceutical company, not for an insurance company, and not for the administration.
Wow.
I really
can
feel
she,
like
can she run as your lieutenant governor? Can she do that?
Yeah, I mean, she's going to do something in there big. But tell them about the educational program you're talking about doing.
Well, you know, I grew up in Pascagoula, Mississippi, And in Pascagoula, everybody pretty much went to the same school. There may have been some smaller private schools, but we had a big school. And there was the co-op education was an opportunity for people. If they wanted to go to college, they could push through. But if they knew they wanted to gain a skill or something, they didn't have to go to college. They could get out of high school and go right to work making really good money and be placed in good positions. I love that.
I absolutely love that.
Mm-hmm, I really do. They had welding and plumbing, electrical. They had food services, you know, administrative. I think I was in distributive education. I think I won an award for that. But I think that college should be for people that know they want to go to college, and people that know that they don't, they need to have that good opportunity and get started with, you know, having a good trade that they can market and live on.
Yeah. Well, in fact, not only can they live on it, many of them can become very wealthy. The old book from the early 90s, The Millionaire Next Door, the average millionaire did not have a college degree. And he was in a service-oriented business, and he grew that business and became a millionaire. So many, 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 many millionaires in America never went to college. Many of them never even graduated from high school. So I absolutely agree. All right, we're going to follow this. Thanks for giving us the honor of announcing it here. Let me quickly ask you, you have something coming up in February. I think we're going to send our film crew down there, if not to broadcast it live, at least capture it and replay it. I told Dr. McCullough that last night on the show. I mentioned your name to him. Do you want to announce what you're going to be doing the end of February?
Yeah, so February the 27th and 28th, we're going to bring lots of doctors down here to Mississippi to a Senate hearing right in our state capitol. And Dr. Peter McCullough is going to lead that hearing as our expert doctor. And then there are going to be Mississippi doctors there. And we're going to have about 15 or 20 expert witnesses. We're going to have some scientists. We're going to have Dr. Jancy Lindsay and David Wiseman and the great Dr. James Thorpe.
Great.
And many more on the list. Hoping to get Paul Alexander and just a whole bunch. That's guys that have been speaking out at the Ron Johnson hearings. We're going to bring them to Mississippi, and we're going to have some vaccine injured there, some that people would know well. We're going to have Ernesto Sr.
Oh, yeah.
We're going to have Bree Dressing, and we're going to have several, probably Cody Flint from Mississippi here, and then I'm going to have a patient of mine there. And we're going to have some nurses, and we're just going to have a roundtable discussion. We're going to talk about these vaccines. Mm-hmm. Are they safe and are they effective? And we're also
Can the public attend? And if they can't, we'll be live streaming it.
There will be some enough room for some. I'll let you know probably 100 to 200 people.
All right, you let us know as the time approaches how people can get the tickets. But we're making the commitment to send a film crew there and film it and live stream it.
Yeah, and I just want to mention too, we'll have the Dr. Robert Corcoran. Okay, he's one of the Greenville doctors. This is important. He's one of the Greenville doctors. He's now on our team, and he is going to be there to testify. He has now treated over 10,000 COVID patients with the Dr. Peter McCullough early intervention protocol and other protocols, but you've been using that one primarily, and using ivermectin, hydroxychloroquine. And you know how many people has died?
I bet zero. I bet zero.
Zero. Zero. So he's, Dr. McCullough said, 85% of the people didn't have to die, but according to Dr. Corcoran right here in Mississippi, 100% of the people didn't have to die. Okay, so we want to get his information out to all doctors in Mississippi so that they will know how to practice good medicine.
Absolutely. All right, Dr. John Witcher, Brooke, thank you guys. Congratulations. And again, thank you for giving us the honor for making the big announcement here tonight. Dr. John Witcher running for governor of Mississippi, going to make the free state of Mississippi. And the primary is coming up this August.
Thank you so much for having us on tonight and keeping us in your prayers.
Thank you, Brian. Thank you,
guys. Dr. John Witcher with his lovely wife, Brooke, right there, folks, making the big national announcement right here. All right, joining me now is Ivan Raiklin. We're going to try to bring Ivan out of his shell tonight, see if we can get an idea of what's really on his mind. Then we'll be joined by a brand new guest, Stephen Mosier, and then historian Bill Federer. Don't forget to use that promo code B66. Folks, do you think Fox News would give him a platform to announce? Do you think much of the corporate media establishment would give someone like Dr. John Witcher a platform, as we've done for now well over a year? No. Or Ivan Raiklin? No. Again, we have to have your support. Sheets, towels, blankets, pet beds, slippers, sandals, mattresses, mattress toppers. You need this stuff anyway. Why not buy it from a company that's giving a big, generous percentage back to keep this show going and my worldview report that takes a team of seven of us 15 man hours a day to put together? Now, if you don't use the promo code B66, we don't get any credit. And we need that credit to have the budget. Every 2 weeks, we get a report. Here's what your sales were. And sometimes you're like, what? Do people not want to support what we're doing? And other weeks, as 2 weeks report comes out, it's like, wow, apparently they really want this show. And we just keep going and growing and expanding. So folks, you got to use B66 or we don't get any credit. And how do we fund all this? Because I promise you, the boys in the control room do not work for free. So please help us pay all the bills. MyPillow.com, promo code B66. It also works at MyStore.com, the home for American entrepreneurs. Joining me now is Ivan Raiklin. Hello, Ivan.
Yes, hello. Can you hear me?
I can hear you. We have you coming in loud and clear from the nation's capital. How are you doing today?
Yeah, not too far away, just across the Potomac River. I'm sitting here in Northern Virginia. A lot going on today. So in Washington, D.C., we had a couple things. So first thing I want to talk about is, well, the Proud Boys trial yesterday. I attended the opening ceremony, if you will. No, it's not the opening ceremony. It was the opening arguments on behalf of both sides. And just like when I was at the pretrial hearing for the Proud Boys trial, you had the government attorneys that are just that they're wearing face toilets when the judge is in the courtroom. And when the judge leaves the courtroom for a break, they immediately take off their face toilets. Now we'll give it to them. They're only wearing one, so they're not double face toileted. And then also the jury happens to also take the government's lead. And actually, I took my son Gregory, who's 10 years old, in order to listen in on it, because it was a late afternoon after 4 p.m. or about closer to 5 when we went up there and it was still going on. And I asked him, what do you think the difference is between those with face toilets and those that don't have face toilets on? And he's like, oh, those with face toilets, definitely Democrats. And I'm like, but the government's supposed to be nonpartisan. He's like, yeah, whatever. They're Democrats.
He's got that as even a 10-year-old, right?
10-year-olds understand it.
Wow.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right, so what's the big news coming out of Washington today? I think it's McCarthy. He's going to have no choice but to release the 14,000 hours from January 6th, right?
Right. I think he didn't want to. Just like he didn't want to give up the rules package, I think the momentum is shifting. Again, previously, before Brandon House had his show, before Lindell TV, and before Frank's speech existed, they had the monopoly on the information flow. But guess what? Because they censored us so forcefully, meaning the FBI did, we created our own platforms and our own content creation mechanisms. So now we're able to get the information out, and that's why we have a lot of backbone and spine applied to the what I call the Real Team 6 and the Terrific 20, and by extension, the 40 members of the House Freedom Caucus that are now hearing from their constituents to apply that pressure so that Kevin McCarthy will essentially be forced to release those 14,000 hours. And I was looking through my feed here on Twitter, I think they pronounce it. And it looks like MTG is trying to save face by making it look like she's going to be the one that forces Kevin McCarthy into releasing those tapes. It was going to happen with or without you, Marjorie. So I get it. You're trying to recover from everybody's angst and anger towards you for being a lapdog of Kevin McCarthy. But either way, hopefully she's able to help influence it. And if it was up to me, I mean, it should have been done on day one when the rules package was accepted. So what Monday, those should have been released so that people could start looking into what actually transpired. Now on that note, Brandon.
Yes.
I'm actually listening to the audiobook that was written, published by, Chief Sund, which was the U.S. Capitol Police Chief at the time of January 6th. And it is actually very interesting. I'm about halfway through it Hopefully I'll finish it up tonight or tomorrow. It's called Courage Under Fire, Stephen Sund. And I felt this when I did my deep dive analysis of what happened on January 6th, you know, and I started on January 7th. My hypothesis was, has always been that out of all the Capitol Police Board, Chief Sund seemed to be the one that was probably a white hat, in the sense that he was trying to get to the truth and was felt that something was off. Based on his actions, he requested National Guard support and external support starting on January 3rd for several on several instances, but he's not able to authorize. It has to come from the Capitol Police Board. So in his book, he talks about a couple of meetings that transpired prior to January 6th, and all of it kind of comports with the Jim Jordan, Jim Banks report that came out prior to the Mike Pence J6 cover-up committee report came out. And what I mean by that is that he talks about how it seems as though Paul Irving, the House Sergeant at Arms, was partisan in his decision-making process. And while he doesn't outwardly say it, when you listen in on his statements, basically chapter one talks about how he was concerned, or it was kind of weird that one person that he spoke with was Maxine Waters, for the first time called him and asked him several questions that he thought felt was, were off, because he had never interacted with her office prior to that point. And she asked questions such as, hey, what are you going to do if people are going to be climbing all over the Capitol?
Oh, my
word.
And
he thought to himself, I've never had anybody ask me that. That was weird.
And remind our audience, who it is Maxine's emailing and asking this of.
Yeah, so Mad Maxine Waters, who's a congresswoman from California, who was the one was advocating for violence right after President Trump was elected.
Talking
and
about
was also
confronting
the one advocating
them at the
gas violence in Minnesota.
Confront them at the gas stations and telling them all that.
Yeah, she was promoting and promulgating an insurrection and violence on American people in California, as well as a member of the George Floyd trial. She was a witness, actually jury intimidation with her statements. So that's the Mad Maxine Waters I'm referring to.
But she's emailing, remind our audience who it is she's emailing.
Contacting and calling, actually, the chief of U.S. Capitol Police prior to January 6th of 2021.
And you're saying he's written a book.
On December 31st, she calls him. Yeah, he wrote a book about this, about all the details of what happened. And I'm about halfway through, and it's very telling.
What's the name of the book again? I want to look it up.
It's called Courage Under Fire. And he talks about his perspective. Now, a lot of it goes into, you know, their perspective of defending the Capitol. But in the run-up to it, you start to see that there's – my hypothesis that I've been saying from the very get-go is that Nancy Pelosi was the one that created the atmospherics to divert the Capitol Police to literally have the Capitol almost not protected, so that she could facilitate that unlawful entry into the Capitol with her fellow instigators. And that was probably directed by her daughter from the inside, coordinated, Alexandra, as she's doing her documentary movie. And then her son-in-law on the outside of the Capitol, probably working with Ray Epps and John Sullivan. And the reason why I'm even more confident about it as I'm listening to this book is some of the interactions that he had with Paul Irving, the House Sergeant at Arms, who works for Nancy Pelosi. And his decision-making was not to authorize and approve external National Guard support, because they use the term, due to optics, we don't want that. Or because, like, Nancy Pelosi won't accept it. Well, why didn't she accept it? Why did her staff not accept it? Is there something more nefarious than what we already know? And I suspect that it was more nefarious in the sense that she wanted to lay bare the Capitol so that the election integrity rally attendees would be instigated into entering the Capitol and then labeled as what they're labeling
so it was a
know,
setup.
Everyone as.
It was a setup.
Yeah, absolutely. Total entrapment setup is my argument, and his evidence in there. He doesn't directly say that, but he alludes to it when you listen.
Does he have a military background or anything?
He used to be a Metropolitan Police Department officer, I believe, for a couple decades. Headed up the special operations divisions within MPD, DC Metro.
So he doesn't seem like some wild leftist nut job.
No, no, he actually seems, he comes off, he says that he's a nonpartisan guy. You know, no one's non-biased, I get it. I suspect he's probably more of a, a normal right of center, moderate right of center individual politically, but, very professional. And if you listen to his hearings, if you listen to all of it.
Let me show the cover of his book real quick. There it is.
Yeah.
Courage Under Fire, Under Siege and Outnumbered 58-1 on January 6th. Stephen A. Sund, former chief of the United States Capitol Police. And you're listening to the audiobook right now.
Right. I am actually not right now while we're talking, but I was just before we went on air. I'm not that good. Come on, Brandon. I have 2 years. I got to focus on you, even though I do talk a lot when we're on air.
You know, people are saying that we're starting to finish each other's sentences, like somehow.
It's like talking to the mirror, right?
Exactly.
No, but here's the deal. I think that Chief Sund was the only one member of the Capitol Police Board that was not in some way complicit in that entrapment facilitated unlawful entry. And reading his book, hopefully I'll finish it off. Maybe next time you have me, I'll give you my entire analysis. But preliminarily, he's providing more evidence that Nancy Pelosi needs to be investigated. Paul Irving, the previous sergeant at arms, needs to be investigated. Nancy Pelosi's daughter, the son-in-law, Michael Pelosi Voss, John Sullivan, and then Ray Epps. I mean, all of that needs to be really looked into with this new sergeant at arms that Kevin McCarthy appointed right after he became the speaker. So hopefully, I mean, if Marjorie Taylor Greene wants to participate in getting to the truth, it would be very useful to get your credibility back in a very quick fashion. If you get to releasing the tapes, recalling those criminal referrals of the J6 defendants, also recalling the criminal referrals on Steve Bannon, on Peter Navarro, and then calling them in to testify, Scott Perry. I mean, there's a lot of things that need to happen in order to clear up what occurred on January 6th. And I think once it's out there on faux news, which is the next thing I want to talk about, then the lemmings will realize that those that attended January 6th were not tinfoil hats, were not conspiracy theorists. They just happened to be early researched critical thinkers.
Yeah. You wanted to say something about faux news?
Yeah, absolutely. So earlier today, faux news finally acquiesced and reported that the CDC is doing a study, and it looks – oh, my gosh, breaking news. 3 years later, it's breaking that the mRNA clot shots actually may be causing strokes.
Really?
To the next question, Chief Sund, and I actually tweeted and tagged him in a tweet earlier today. I said, Chief Sund, is it possible that Brian Sicknick, one of your Capitol Police officers that died on January 7th, according to the D.C. coroner's report, he died of natural causes to stroke. Is it possible that he had the Pfizer variant of natural cause of death or the Moderna variant natural cause of death that caused those two strokes that then the radical left used as, his two strokes and why he died was based on a fire extinguisher that some protester bludgeoned him with. In fact, it was he had two strokes. He died on the following day. And the key question that needs to be answered is, did he have a Moderna mRNA shot that caused that stroke, or did he have a Pfizer shot that caused the stroke? Plural.
Absolutely. All right. So any other big news or anything you want to hint at?
Yeah, we talked about this earlier. Let's just say that keep an eye on the judiciary. Folks, keep an eye on what the Judiciary Committee is going to be doing here shortly in the House, i.e. Jim Jordan. Make sure you follow along in that journey. Also keep an eye on what he's going to do with that, what I call the Deep State Body Check Committee, also known as the Deep State Marauder Committee, the weaponization of the FBI, yada, yada, right? But it's the Deep State Marauder Committee. Keep an eye on that and kind of what I'm doing maybe with that. Also keep an eye on the House Permanent Select Committee on Intelligence. Now that Adam Bullshit and Eric Swalwell have been flicked off of the committees and no longer are there, there's going to be a lot of opportunity to provide yet another body check mechanism against the lawless executive branch's intelligence community And if you know my background, I might be providing a little bit of support to that. And let's take a look. Oh, the House Armed Services Committee. Keep an eye on them as they develop a plan and strategy to push back against the lawless, unconstitutional activities of this acting Secretary Austin over at the Department of Defense, General Milley, and et cetera. And if you want to really closely follow along with this, Brennan.
Yeah.
Look underneath my name on the screen and just go ahead and subscribe to my Substack.
Go ahead and pull the trigger on it.
I'll try to provide as much detail
as
possible.
Go back to his name. Put that back up there. Go ahead and pull the trigger and subscribe to his Substack.
Please, go ahead and take a look at the Substack. I know I haven't posted anything in the last few days because, again, in order to have substantive Substacks, I have to go into the, let's just say, the enemy's lair to get good info to then put it in there to then distribute it out to folks. That I would argue that no one else is doing this type of investigative research that I am. And I'm saying that I'm trying to be modest, which I know it's hard, but I am trying to be modest.
Well, you know what, Rush Limbaugh?
I went to 25 offices yesterday. 25 House offices. I think yesterday, the day before.
Yeah.
And today I went to a few more. And that interaction, I mean, remember, the offices are open. So they're waiting and begging for you to ask them questions.
Wow. And, you know, Rush Limbaugh should say, if it's true, it ain't bragging.
So I try to be as modest as I can.
Well, and because you have so much to tell us, and we can't just turn this into, you know, the Ivan Raiklin show, we have asked you to start a 30-minute daily report that we'll start posting up over on my website at wvwtv.com. Monday, 3 p.m. Central, we'll start posting up the Ivan Raiklin show, 30 minutes every day.
The Raiklin Report.
Raiklin Report. I think introduction will even have a picture of him riding a camel, believe it or not, folks.
I mean, I always have to tell people this. You always have to have a picture of yourself riding a camel in full, you know, offensive, kinetic, Hollywood-esque look to it so that you can face the enemy prepared. I mean, seriously, Brandon, you have to have that picture.
Yes, you do. Yes, you
do. So by next week, I want to see you in, like, military gear with a – let's just say a 1900s or earlier rifle on a camel as though you're conducting the Arab revolt.
Well, I actually have a friend who owns a camel, and I bottle fed that camel within days of its being born. It's now several years old. So I could maybe pull off getting a picture on the camel. That could maybe happen.
You're not a man if you don't do it. You must do it.
Well, you guys can see the camel riding Ivan Raiklin in the introduction of his new 30-minute daily report. Starts Monday over on my website, wvwtv.com. So, Ivan, we look forward to that.
Thank you for having me. Let's see how long I can, you know, I know you've been doing it for decades or centuries on a daily basis. Let's see if I can at least last, you know, a few episodes.
I told you,
a few thousand.
I'm doing 4 hours a day, so I think you can handle 30 minutes.
I don't know. It's tough. It's tough. But I'll try.
All right.
I'll see y'all on Monday.
Get some rest. Get ready. Big week coming next week.
No,
daily
it's
commitment.
Be big.
Daily
I'll
commitment.
Be breaking brand new stuff every single day.
I know you will. All right. Have a great weekend.
Brandon, I appreciate everything. Appreciate the platform. Thanks,
you
man.
You too. Check out his website. Right. Throw it up there again because people need to subscribe so he can feed his family. IvanRaiklin.substack.com. IvanRaiklin.substack.com. All right. Yes, Central Time, 3 p.m. So let's see here now. Let me show you something else here. Look at this. Isn't that beautiful? That is a clock made by our associate producer, Annie Cyrus. Yeah, that's made by her. That's a brand new product she's got. That's a bicycle, if you can't tell, which I could tell right away. Isn't that beautiful? Made by Annie Cyrus. Those are all handmade. Okay. She couldn't duplicate these if she wanted. Oh, here's another one, a rose and a pyramid. Those always sell really fast. So those are all available on her website, lutfstudio.com, which stands for Live Up to Freedom, LUTF LutfStudio.com, LutfStudio.com. Now, when you order it, use the promo code WVW66, and she'll make a contribution back to my foundation. Use the promo code WVW66, and she'll make a contribution back to my foundation, okay? These are all handmade by Annie. Annie Cyrus of LutfStudio.com. Annie Cyrus, associate producer of ours. All right, there you go. All right. What about someone's... Yeah, we bottle fed that camel. You're absolutely right. Some of my family are texting me. Yeah, and now I don't know if it would let me get on its back or not, but I saw it just a couple weeks ago. It's doing well. But bottle fed that little thing years ago when it was born. Let's see. What else do I got? Let's go real quick before we go to Bill Federer. We were trying to get a hold of Steven Mosier to be our first-time guest, but we're having a hard time reaching him tonight. But we'll get him rescheduled if we can. Let's see here. I want to take you over here real quick. Look at this. WVWTVstore.com. Emergency freeze-dried food. Yeah, you might want to do this. I think I told you I bought enough for my family for 6 months starting in 2013. Didn't become a distributor until 2016. So, folks, whether it's precious metals, freeze-dried food, if I promote it, I have used it probably years before I ever started promoting it. Said that to one of our broadcasters the other night. I said, to me, it's very important that I only have things I promote on my show that I use or have bought or believe in, or I don't promote it. I could load this show up, folks, with all kinds of advertisers. Believe me, they're knocking down my door, many of them, to get on here. I don't like their products. I don't like what they offer. And if I don't like it, I don't use it, I don't promote it. And I was ordering freeze-dried food back in 2013 for my family. Then I became a distributor because I mentioned it on the air and so many people wanted it. What'd you get? Where'd you get it? How'd you get it? I thought, well, we're free market people. Why not offer this service to our people? And then we'll make a reasonable profit and put it into growing all of our network technology. And so it's still the case. So again, if you are looking for freeze-dried food, please come here to this site, WVWTVstore.com, and you can get the Ready Hour Ultimate Breakfast. By the way, there was a lull with Christmas, and now all of a sudden, they're flying out the door again, which is reasonable. There's patterns. There's ebb and flows. Ready Hour Protein Kit with real meat. Ready Hour Fruit, Veggie, and Snack. Ready Hour Gluten-Free Kit, 1 year, 4 week, 2 years, 72-hour test kit, 3 months, 6 months. It's all there. Now, if you prefer to order over the phone, just call. Libby will even answer the phone right now on a Friday night. And Libby will take your order over the phone. She'll track it all the way to your door. 901-468-9357 is her number. 901-468-9357. That's our order line. It's also our donation line if you want to support my WVW Foundation. But 901-468-9357. And then speaking of my foundation, that is WVWFoundation.com, WVWFoundation.com. It exists to help people understand the times through the lens of a Christian worldview. Next month, be 30 years next month that I started Worldview Weekends. We started out as a Christian biblical worldview conference organization holding these Worldview Weekends in over 300 locations throughout America. And then we transitioned in 2006 to television. And then in June of 2006, I sat down in my office, writing out the business model for how we could start a conservative broadcast digital network. And I said to my IT guy, I want a Roku channel. And it was my IT guy, and he said, what's Roku? And of course, we were one of the first Roku channels. And of course, here we are with Lindell TV. So again, we started out as a conference ministry with Biblical Worldview Weekend conferences all over the country. People like David Limbaugh, Josh McDowell, Kay Arthur, many people that you would know speaking for us. And then we, Michael Reagan. And then we transitioned into TV. I was doing radio the whole time. Transitioned into television. And of course, that whole organization started 30 years ago next month. So if you appreciate what we're doing, we're still doing it, but instead of traveling to a gazillion cities by motor coach, and holding conferences, we now put it out there for free. And I could put all my programs behind a paywall and say, you got to pay to watch it. But we put them out there on my website at wvwtv.com free of charge. And we also do our documentaries free. I could sell Brainwashed America Part 1, Brainwashed America Part 2, but I just put them out there for free. Because so many of you help us with our foundation. We have a Sunday night service every Sunday night since 2015. I've been teaching on Sunday nights. This Sunday night, 8 p.m. Central, I'll continue the series on the convergence of end-time events. All of these remarkable things happening at the same time. And the fact that three or four of them are happening at the same time is pretty remarkable, but I'm talking about a ton of things happening at one time. And the shocking thing is, the Bible tells us these things are going to happen, and now they're happening. And they seem to be laying the foundation for Bible prophecy to be fulfilled, which is kind of showing us where we are on God's timetable for world events. And, you know, Jesus told us about that in Matthew 24. There's a special blessing in the book of Revelation that comes, it says, for those who seek to understand that book. So if you appreciate that Sunday night service, our foundation sponsors that. That's every Sunday night, 8 p.m. Central Time at wvwtv.com/live. And so if you'd like to support my foundation, you can do that by going to wvwfoundation.com, wvwfoundation.com. You also find our mailing address there if you prefer to support us through the mail. All right. Joining me now is Bill Federer. Bill, thanks for joining us.
Hey, Brandon. Great to be with you.
Great to be with you as well. I like your tie. It's a nice tie.
Yeah, my wife picks out all my clothes.
Well, that's a great wife you've got there. I know you appreciate that. All right. Let's talk about several things. One of them is I want to talk about borders. I want to talk about reparations. I want to talk about illegal immigrants. Well, first of all, borders and illegal immigrants would kind of go together, but I want to talk about how illegal immigrants are being used for a Cloward Piven strategy and conflict. But let's start with borders. Here is a letter that I showed earlier tonight on the Lindell Report, sitting in for Mike Lindell. I've never read this on the air till tonight. This is from Matt Gaetz, dated October 14th, 2022, the Secretary of State Blinken. I want to read the whole thing and get your response. During a September 12th press conference, after your meeting in Mexico City, President Andre Manuel Lopez Obrador referred to a private conversation where you expressed support for the, quote, consolidation of the North American region, end quote. President Lopez said that you two discussed consolidating Canada, the United States, and Mexico into a project similar to the European Union. President Lopez continued to say there was a discussion of a regional constitution to be carried out in furtherance of an economic agenda, indicating such features as open borders, shared technology, and the distribution of oil. Such a vision of a North American Union is entirely out of step with Americans' vision for our nation. It is nothing less than a war on American sovereignty. Our citizens have the right to self-determination and self-rule. As a Secretary of State, your mandate is loyalty to the interest of our people, not the economic development of a narco state. If what President Lopez Obrador has said regarding your opinions is true, the American people deserve transparency and answers. Secretary Blinken, please clarify any remarks made privately to President Obrador concerning the formation of an American Union, and then he wants him to answer questions about that. I have been talking about this for 20 plus years with people like Phyllis Schlafly and others, the late Phyllis Schlafly. George H. Bush, of course, brought us into the whole New World Order. George W. was busy pushing this idea of a North American Union with Heidi Cruz, the wife of Ted Cruz. I wrote about that in my book in 2015. So here we are, the Club of Rome dividing the world into 10 regions. The European Union Commission dividing the world into 10 regions. The United Nations dividing the world into 10 regions. And I have and I can show these pictures to prove this. It seems to fit with Bible prophecy, by the way, the world divided into 10 regions. But this is what open borders is apparently all about, Mr. Bill Federer. The destruction of America's sovereignty. And now they're working on regional, if not global, currency. So when you don't have national laws, national borders, national currency, and you no longer have a national history because they've branded it racist, you no longer have a country. Can you please respond from a historian's perspective?
Sure. Well, past behavior is the best indicator of future performance. And so we can learn some lessons as to how countries have risen and fallen and the role of borders and immigration. Matter of fact, I have a book. It's called Socialism, The Real History from Plato to the Present. And the subtitle is How the Deep State Capitalizes on Crises to Consolidate Control. I just want to point out at the beginning that borders are God's idea. Deuteronomy chapter 32, it says, when the Most High gave the nations their inheritance, when he separated the sons of men, he set the boundaries of the peoples. And so, in a sense, God is not for a borderless world. And the idea that there are peoples and groups, even the book of Revelation says, in heaven there'll be those praising God from all peoples, tribes, tongues, and nations. The earliest borders are in the Bible. You got Jacob and his uncle Laban setting up a pillar saying, okay, neither one is going to cross this to do harm to the other. And then when the children of Israel went into the promised land, Exodus 23, the Lord said, I will fix your boundary from the Red Sea to the Sea of the Philistines, from the wilderness to the river Euphrates. Never before was there a country, even before it goes into the land, having the boundaries, the borders already set permanently. And then, you know, Moses sends the spies in, Joshua does as well, and they divided up further into the different tribes. And the tribes have borders. And one interesting thing people may not catch, David took a census and he got in trouble for it. Well, why was that wrong? Kings would take censuses before they would go on offensive military campaigns. In other words, David had fulfilled the borders that God had promised Moses, and he was being tempted to become Alexander the Great 7 centuries before Alexander the Great. He would say, hey, I'm on a roll, I'm conquering. Hey, I can just cross over. And God said, no, these are the borders, the boundaries, stick to it. And now God also says in Deuteronomy 28 that if you hearken to the voice of the Lord, you'll be blessed and people will come and wanting to seek your laws and seek your God. But it says if you don't hearken to the voice of the Lord, your borders will be overrun. And it says a people that you do not know will come in and eat your land and your labor and your produce. And the foreigners will come in and reside amongst you and rise up above you. And the Lord shall bring a nation against you from far away. And so one of the signs of judgment is God lets your borders get overrun and the enemy comes in and begins to be an occupying force. So in 721 BC, the king of Assyria overran Israel's borders and took the 10 northern tribes captive. And then in 597 BC, Nebuchadnezzar overran Judah's borders and took them captive to Babylon. Cyrus let him come back, but then in 70 AD, the Romans overran their borders and scattered the Jews, and for 1,900 years, they were scattered around the world. The Romans had borders, the Roman Empire, and we're all familiar with Hadrian's Wall. He expanded Rome to the furthest of its borders that had ever been. Hadrian also did put down the Bar Kokhba Revolt. He, in 132 AD, he literally wanted to exterminate the entire Jewish race and their religion. That was Hadrian. So Hadrian's Wall, but then the Roman Empire began to have their borders overrun. A little bit of history. China begins to build the Great Wall of China around the 3rd century BC. But by the 4th century AD, they had completed so much of the Great Wall of China that the Huns and the Mongols could no longer cross the Chinese border and attack. And so the Huns turned west, and it started a domino effect of displaced tribes across Central Asia that spilled over the Roman borders. Now, at first, when they came in to the Roman, we're talking Visigoths, Ostrogoths, Anglos, Saxons, Jutes, Lombards, Berbers. They would come across slowly and assimilate and learn the Latin language and the Latin culture. And they would even get jobs and even rise up to generals in the military. But then they began to come so fast. There was a year where the Rhine River froze and a tribe of Visigoths just walked right across it and set up camp on the Roman side, and nobody chased them out. And they kept their language. They kept their Visigothic customs. And this began to happen more and more and more. Weakness invites aggression. And so they began to come in larger numbers, and it broke up the unity of the Roman Empire, and eventually it turned into Attila the Hun. And he not just came across, he began to conquer and destroy city after city after city in Europe. And so we have to understand the concept. Weakness invites aggression. So you show some weakness and you get a slow amount come over. You show more weakness, a larger amount comes over. They don't assimilate, breaks up the unity. You show more weakness, you literally have military attacks coming across the border. And so this is what we can expect. It's going to become militarily violent along the border.
Militarily violent. You said so many great things historically there, Bill. I want to share with you one article. You want to show this here, Thomas? This is at my website, my aggregated news website, worldviewreport.com. It's the conservative alternative to the Drudge Report that just went right into the toilet. But if you go to worldviewreport.com every day, I mean, you could see how many news stories are here, just a ton, okay? Every day, we're putting new stuff. The newer stuff is right here at the top. So here's what I just put up tonight, Bill, today. Migrants are drinking all day, having sex in the stairs in taxpayer-funded luxury New York hotel, says a whistleblower, okay? And the whistleblower is apparently taking pictures of all of this food that's still in the wrappers, you can see there, bagels, and garbage bags. I reported this in the Worldview Report. Garbage bags of good food is being thrown away at a time when many American-born Americans can't even afford groceries or having a hard time affording them. And this is taxpayer-funded food being thrown away. And the whistleblower is taking pictures of it and complaining about it. And what we're seeing here is, again, what we're talking about, an invasion. And apparently what they're doing is drinking beer and cooking on a hot plate because they don't like the food they're getting. They want to make their own food. So they're cooking on hot plates in their rooms or whatever and getting in drunken fights and brawls and having sex in the stairwell. One has to wonder if some of this isn't deliberate in order to break our system, the Cloward-Piven strategy of overwhelm the welfare rolls till they collapse, but also to create animosity between Americans who get up every day, work hard, go to a job, pay their taxes, and for many of them, eggs have gotten too expensive because our government's killing chickens because one fowl gets the flu, whatever kind of flu they want to come up with this time, then you got to kill the whole flock. So millions and millions and millions of birds being killed for our food supply. So now eggs and meat's going up, this generated food crisis. So while Americans get up and work every day, work hard, pay their taxes to a corrupt government that sends their money across the globe to tyrants and dictators and corrupt governments, and then launders it back to the politicians in Washington, we sit and watch illegal immigrants who are here illegally taking the food that we pay for them to have and throwing it in the garbage. Now, I don't know about you, but this is going to start creating some animosity. And of course, then they use that to say, oh, you see, the racists are the free market capitalists, Christians, people of faith. So aren't they trying to create chaos and conflict here?
You know, I get the privilege of going around the country speaking, and I've been in several cities where the pastor will be driving me and he'll point out, oh, see that hotel over there? The entire thing is filled full of illegal immigrants. All right. The government comes in and with a check and says, we will rent every room every night. Here's a big check. And they fill the thing up. And the local community doesn't want this. But the federal government is imposing them on these communities. So what this is the weaponization of immigration. Mm. And so a little background. After World War II, about 50% of the world's borders were set after World War II. And so you had new countries and the Soviet Union wanted to make them into satellites. And so they would want to destabilize these countries, and one of the ways they would do it would be immigration. And so the Cloward-Pippin strategy, for those not familiar, Richard Cloward, Francis Pippin, were Columbia University professors. They were socialists. And they said that you can't conquer the West with tanks. You have to do it the back door through immigration. You take advantage of the Christian populace and force them to live up to their rules. In other words,
Wait a minute. You take the Christian population and force them to live up to their rules. So in other words, you're setting them up to try to show, oh, you guys are really hypocrites. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah. So they said, well, you like to take care of the poor? Here's a lot of poor. You like to take care of immigrants? Here's a lot of immigrants. It's basically every church would have a benevolence program, and they would take care of the every now and then person that needs help. Well, guess what? There are some people that work the system, and they'll go to every single church with the same story, and it'll be, oh, this is an emergency, this, and they'll hit them up, and they'll drain the system. And if you let them, they will take all the budget that the church has. And at some point, the church has to say, look, we'll help you once and twice, but you need to, right? And every parent faces this. You have a child, and you can let them live in your basement until they're 40 years old. But at some point, you have to say, okay, enough of this. And it's overloading the system. Saul Alinsky talks about that as well. And so they would implement this in New York and get everybody to sign up for welfare until it bankrupted the city, and the city had to appeal to the state. And then they said, well, let's do it statewide. Then they bankrupt the state's welfare, and the state has to appeal to the federal government. And it's a consolidating of power by overwhelming the Christian charity. And so some of these instances after World War II, the Soviet Union would want to destabilize countries. And one of them would be through pushing in populations that would eat up all their welfare and their economy and cause this new country to face economic collapse. And then they would blame the leadership. And that's when they would stoke the fires between the rich and the poor, the haves and the have-nots. And then they would do a coup or a rigged election and replace the leader of this new country with a Soviet puppet, who promises to fix things, but all he does is take away their rights, but they're not smart enough to know they've been sold a bill of goods. One of the instances where this happened was in the Middle East, and you had the PLO. Its charter was written in Moscow, and you had Khrushchev and Brezhnev, and they were strategic in the people that were Arabs that were either pushed out of Israel or left Israel and went to the surrounding Arab countries, that they would not let them assimilate. And they wanted to force them to stay as a people group so that they could be used politically to drive a wedge in the Middle East and to make sure that there would always be conflict. And you look at Syria. After World War II, Syria was a balancing act. It had different Christian minorities. It had different Islamic minorities. It had the, I think you pronounce it Alawite, but it's a moderate, almost secular version of Islam. And each one had their different area. And it was sort of like floating a saucer in a sink full of water. I mean, it was this balancing act in Syria. And what happened with the PLO, they would push the Arab Muslims into Syria and tip over the balance, and then begin to take over and drive out the other different groups. But they would change the country's politics through immigration.
I have a video clip of a Hispanic guy here in America working for the Marxist. He's an open Marxist. And he's saying that. He's saying if we can get enough illegal immigrants here, make them citizens, we can win every progressive election from now on. I mean, they won't need voter fraud anymore, because these people that come here will be just simply voting themselves more entitlement programs.
Yes, and a perfect example of that is Kosovo. So you have Serbia, and Serbia from maybe 900 AD up until 1900 AD had been fighting Muslims and the Muslim Turks, and they would be coming in and they would be fighting war, a courageous war. You read all these stories. And well, what happened? Serbia was pressured to take in immigrants, and these poor Muslim immigrants would come in and they would go into the cities and they would live in the poor neighborhoods. And then there would be more of them and more of them and more until they grew to be a larger percentage of the population and larger until pretty soon they were the majority of the population in Kosovo. And then they wanted to begin rebelling against the Serbian country that was nice enough to let them in the first place.
Wait a minute. That sounds like all the Somalis and Islamists that have flooded into Minnesota with their liberal immigration policies. And now when asked by a cameraman on the street of St. Paul, what do you prefer, the Constitutional Republic or Sharia, Islamic law? They want Islamic law. Now they walk around and they, I'm told, defecate in the changing rooms at the Mall of America and other malls, that they are unruly. They vandalize, not all of them, but many of them. And they intimidate and harass regular, good old-fashioned Americans who are now scared to death of them. That sounds an awful lot like what you're talking about. They come in, and they take over, and they change the culture, and they want accommodation. They want prayer rooms in the airports and all this other stuff. No accommodation for the Americans because their Christian infidel religion and the Jews and their Jewish religion is offensive to them. Sounds an awful lot like what's happening in America through the red-green axis.
Yes, yes, exactly. And so Serbia had these different Muslim minority groups coming in, getting larger and larger. And then Bill Clinton decides to recognize Kosovo as its own independent nation. So this would be like, have, like you mentioned, all of a sudden, let's say St. Paul, Minnesota decides it wants to be another country, and the United Nations immediately recognizes it as another country. And the people of Minnesota were like, what just happened? we were being nice letting them in. And so it's immigrate, increase, eliminate. That's
Say that again.
Immigrate, increase, eliminate. So they immigrate as minorities and then increase in number and political clout, and then they eliminate the previous residents of the neighborhoods and communities and have this demographic change. And normally it drives out people of one particular party and increases the size of the other party. And so we've seen this with elections. Six cities determined the 2020 election. You had Detroit, Philadelphia, Phoenix, Atlanta, Milwaukee. And so the strategy is pretty simple. Let crime go up in the cities. Intentionally let crime go up. Let criminals out of jail, defund the police. What happens? Well, some people feel uncomfortable with the crime and they leave. Who? Well, maybe those with families. Okay, family people, pro-family, they're usually belonging to a more conservative political party. And then they defund the police and let businesses get their windows smashed and their businesses torched and set on fire. And so what happens? Pro-business people leave the city. Okay, pro-family, pro-business. And then they shut down churches. And so what happens is a lot of people that are pro-family, pro-business, and pro-church leave the big city. Well, who's left in the big city? Well, people that are dependent on government handouts, and they usually belong to a different political party. So by letting crime go up in the cities, you force a demographic change that has a political impact. Now, I'm not the first that noticed this. One of the main ones was Lyndon Johnson. So Lyndon Johnson was part of the Democrat Party, and they had a century or more of passing Jim Crow laws and black codes and being racist against blacks. Lincoln, Republican, freed the slaves, right? Teddy Roosevelt, Republican, had the first black man in the White House for dinner, Booker T. Washington. And so Lyndon Johnson, with the advent of television, was facing a problem, because when the Democrats would have, the police commissioner, Bull Connor in Birmingham, Alabama, hose down black citizens and sick dogs on them, and it's being captured on TV. and this is looking bad for the Democrat Party. So Lyndon Johnson does the big switch from intimidation to entitlement. And he is, Ron Kessler wrote a book called Inside the White House, and he said that Lyndon Johnson is forcing these governors to switch their tactics from intimidation to entitlement. And he says, we will have, and he uses the N-word, voting Democrat the next 200 years. And so this is the idea that you get them to sign up for welfare and you destabilize the inner cities so that people lose their jobs and then they sign up for welfare. And then you have this strong tendency for people to vote to continue to get free money. I mean, if you were getting a $1,000 check in the mail every week, month after month, year after year, would you wake up one day and ask yourself, who's sending me this $1,000 check every day? I'm going to find out who they are and vote them out of office. Would anybody do that? No, you'd say, I got a couple more bills to pay. Once you get people to receive free money, you can pretty well count on their vote. So Lyndon Johnson called this the Great Society Welfare State. It's implementing the Cloward-Piven strategy, and it was 1965. And then he decided to implement it with immigration. So Lyndon Johnson and Teddy Kennedy, the senator, pushed through a change in the immigration quotas to bring in fewer people from Europe that have the traditional work ethics and so forth, and bring in more people from very poor third world countries because they would have no problem signing up for welfare. And once you get them on welfare, they'll pretty well want to stay on welfare. So it's a way to build a voter base, a way to change the demographics of voting areas. I mean, think of it for a moment. If every immigrant coming into America was going to be a Republican voter, do you think Biden would continue to want to let him in? So the country needs immigrants. You need people to come in with their strength to work, their innovative ideas, but you need them to come in at a rate at which they can be assimilated. So think of it. Imagine if all the food you eat in a one-year period of time, and I sat you down at a table, and I made you eat it all in a day, you would die. It would overload your body, right? And so you think of, we need immigrants. We need food. You need people to come in. But you bring them in at the rate that they can be assimilated.
And you bring in people that are here to follow the laws and assimilate. And many of them don't want to assimilate. Many of the Islamists, they don't plan to assimilate. They don't. They don't want to. You know, the other thing, too, is last night Todd Benzman was showing video of the 10, and he says there are tens and tens and tens of thousands that are riding the rail cars deep from down in South America up to the American border and hop off and then walk over. And I said, a lot of those guys are in good shape. They're young. What are they coming here to get on entitlement programs? What are they doing? He said, no, they're coming here to work. They're coming here to work because they get paid more in America, because when they ship the money back to Mexico or Guatemala or wherever, it goes so far. The money goes so far. The American money goes so far. He said many of them are building gigantic palatial mansions. They're concrete, but they're big, and they're good craftsmen, and they send the money back home to build these huge houses, and they're hoping to work long enough to send enough money home to build the big house and then come back to America. The problem here, too, Bill, is that the middle-class business owner is taxed into oblivion. They have to have insurance, workers' comp, red tape. They have to follow the laws and have so much expense that when the illegal comes along and says, we'll re-roof your house, the American business owner cannot compete with what the illegals are charging because the illegals don't factor into their price paying tax, a federal tax. They don't factor in unemployment insurance and workers' comp. And so our American middle-class business workers cannot compete with the illegals that are here working under the table who don't have the same overhead who therefore can charge a lot less. So they're killing our business owners. True or false?
No, that's true. It is. You know, one of the quotes that Will and Ariel Durant, who were historians, wrote in their book, The Story of Civilization, 1944, talking about the Roman Empire being overrun by the Visigoths and Ostrogoths. They write, if Rome had not engulfed so many men of alien blood in so brief a time, if she had passed all these newcomers through her schools instead of her slums, if she had treated them as men with 100 potential excellencies, if she had occasionally closed her gates to let assimilation catch up with infiltration, she might have gained new racial and literary vitality from the infusion and might have remained a Roman Rome, the voice and citadel of the West. So the idea of close your gates, and in other words, stop eating for just a minute and digest. Let the food you've eaten assimilate. Let the people that have come in become a part of the country, and then the country can grow. You know, prior to the Lyndon Johnson's Great Society welfare state, every immigrant was a net plus. I mean, other than the criminals. What do I mean? There was no welfare. They weren't signing up for city welfare, state welfare, federal welfare. The welfare was their extended family members who would let them stay in their house and they would work together. And it was the churches. It was not the government. And so they would come over and they would provide cheap labor. And people could start businesses and get them to work. But guess what? They would learn the business, they would pool their resources, and they would end up buying businesses and sending their kids to school. And then there would be another wave of immigrants that would come in.
And we see that today, Bill. We see that today with many of the immigrants who come to America legally, the Asian immigrants, within one generation, they're making better money than the average American. They work harder, they work longer, they get degrees. I mean, no one talks about the Asian privilege. They talk about white privilege. And I don't want them to talk about Asian privilege because these people are have not done anything wrong. They've done everything right. They come here legally. They work hard, whether we're talking about Indians, you know, from India. Many of them come here legally, and they work hard, and they earn their businesses. And so the American dream is here, but they add a benefit, and they're paying taxes. So I agree with you. We still have some of that going on today, don't we?
Yes. So you had German, Irish, Jewish, Polish, Italian, Chinese, and they would each come in. And when they did, they were on the bottom of the social economic ladder, and they would work really cheap. And so they would push everybody else up the ladder. But then another wave would come in, and there was no welfare other than their extended family and the churches.
Yeah.
And so they would move up the ladder. When Lyndon Johnson pushed through his Great Society welfare state, they would come across and immediately sign up. Now they're a net minus. They're an immediate drain on the economy rather than a plus. But again, the book Socialism, The Real History from Plato to the Present has a lot of this information in there. AmericanMinute.com.
AmericanMinute.com. Is that what you said?
Yes.
AmericanMinute.com, AmericanMinute.com. All right, I need to have you back to talk about reparations because we didn't have time to get to it, because there's a real push across the country now for reparations. Another way to divide us, more welfare state, more collapsing, more taking money from the free market system. So I want to get a history lesson from you on reparations in the future, real soon, actually. Bill Federer, AmericanMinute.com. Thank you, Bill.
Thank you.
All right, folks, as we conclude, remember, this show is brought to you by you. We need your support. MyPillow.com. Look, if you don't use the promo code B66, we don't get credit. That Worldview Report alone is 7 people, 15 man hours a day, 5 days a week. Then we have this show, 90 minutes live each and every night, plus the bandwidth and the streaming. Folks, I have to have your support to keep everybody working in the control room, post-editing, loading everything up. To keep it all together, folks, I have to have your support. If you don't use the promo code B66, we don't get credit. So please, use that code, tweet, text, email, Facebook, Truth Social, Frank Social. Ask them, hey, look at what this guy's doing over here with this team and all the platform he gives all these people. He doesn't just sit there and talk all night. He brings on people and shares his platform with other people. So now let's keep this broadcast going where we let people speak and talk about things you're not going to hear on corporate media. But I got to have your support. MyPillow.com. sheets, towels, blankets, pet bed, slippers, sandals, mattresses, mattress toppers, robes, and so much more. Use the promo code B66. I had to look to make sure she's there. Give me a wide shot without a lower third real quick. There she is. All of you like to have your little Delta fix. She's sound asleep on her MyPillow pet bed. Get one for your pet. All right. There she is. MyPillow.com, promo code B66. All right. Sunday night, I'll be back. 8 p.m. Central Time right here. 8 p.m. Central Time Sunday night for our Sunday night service we've been holding since 2015. Part 5 on the convergence of end time events. Thanks for watching. Take care. Hello, I'm Brandon House. If you appreciate this 24-hour-a-day free broadcast platform, will you consider supporting us? One way you can support us to keep pushing out free programming to people all over the world is by joining in partnership with WVW Foundation. The WVW Foundation exists to proclaim the truth of a biblical worldview, to help people understand the times through the lens of a biblical worldview. If you appreciate that, we appreciate your partnering with WVWFoundation.com. That's WVWFoundation.com. If you prefer to support us through the mail, the mailing address is WVW Foundation, P.O. Box 1690, Collierville, Tennessee 38027. If you prefer to support us over the phone, you can make a contribution by calling 901-468-9357. That's 901-468-9357. Your support of the WVW Foundation, as I said, allows us to push out free programming. Many people put their programming behind a paywall. If you don't catch it live, you don't get to see it. WVW Foundation is committed to working with WVW Broadcast Network to push out programming as a ministry of the Foundation. The Foundation also sponsors a Sunday night service that I've been hosting since 2015. If you'd like to join us for our Sunday night service, you can do so every Sunday night, 8 p.m. Central Time at wvwtv.com/live. wvwtv.com/live. Thanks again for your support of the WVW Foundation at wvwfoundation.com.